Okay, welcome to the show, everybody. Neil, how is it going this week, man?
It's been a kind of rough week. Computer fried, so that's
Oh,
been
damn,
a lot of
dude.
fun. Work is annoying. I'll be looking for a new job. Basically, this weekend I'm going to be redoing my whole resume and writing some
This
cover
so this was
letters.
the week that broke the camel's back.
I mean, I've known that I've wanted to for a while now, but I'm just thinking about like things I know are going to be coming up event-wise at work, and I just cannot imagine being there again with some of these people.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Are you going to stay where you're currently at, or are you going to move closer back home, you think?
I'm not looking to move.
Okay.
I'll consider opportunities, but
Yeah.
I'm not trying to leave.
Yeah, sure, I understand. And your computer fried doing what?
I was playing Ghost of Tsushima that you
Okay,
gifted me.
nice.
So really, you're responsible.
Yeah.
You owe me
Sorry, man.
$300.
Damn.
Damn. Damn it, I'm gonna have to call Sony about that one. Yeah, that's cool. I'm glad you're finally getting around to playing Ghost of Tsushima, even if it fried your PC. We should be probably getting a sequel here in the next couple of years, I would
I
imagine.
would hope so. I'd think so by now.
Yeah.
It's been 4 years.
It's been 4 years, yeah. So yeah, definitely some, probably should be something close on the horizon. And we already heard from him. Gideon, how's it going, man?
It's going good. I made it to Moog, Lord of Blood, on Elden Ring. I got him down to half health, but only tried a couple times. Haven't been able to beat him just yet. Work's been going good.
I love how like the funny thing about From Software games is like you could just say the name of the boss and like we know that it's a From Software game. Like Moog, Lord of Blood is such a
I love it. They have really fucking cool names. I like that my name's in Elden Ring too, Gideon. That's
And
always
every other
nice.
G name you can possibly imagine. I mean, there's Godric, Godwin, Gideon,
Maybe
Godfried.
Magdalene, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of G names in there.
What else? I watched with a buddy, I watched SLC Punk with Matthew Lillard from I think 1998 or so. Really liked that. That was another really good, just interesting punk movie, and really liked Matthew Lillard's performance and everything in it. It was interesting because it was about like two punks in like 1985 in Salt Lake City. So very interesting. That was fun. Definitely recommend it if you like Matthew Lillard. And then yeah, I'm almost done with My Name Is Earl. We've got like seven episodes left.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. How many seasons?
There's four.
4 seasons. Okay, well, that's not, it's not like you're doing One Piece or anything like that.
No.
Okay, and I guess I should say, I've been, God, let's see. I've been playing Devil May Cry 1, PS2, just getting my ass handed to me by that game. I've been playing Dave the Diver, which I don't like very much. I've been working on getting a World of Warcraft character to 70 by the time the expansion new the by the time the new expansion comes out.
Which
I've got
is September sometime?
no it's like in a week or it's like
Oh,
this upcoming weekend or something like that. Like early
okay.
access is already out. Which is interesting. So I gotta catch up with that and then I think I've got band practice this weekend and then I play at the State Fair next weekend and then I'm done for band stuff for I think. Like, I don't think we have anything on like September, October. So,
Okay.
it'll be good to have a nice break from that. We've been just crazy busy this whole summer up
Yeah,
here.
seems
So,
like it.
Minnesotans really try to take advantage of the weather while it's warm, and that usually means you get sucked into doing a whole bunch of like stuff during the summer. So it just flew by. I mean, we've had more busy weekends than we've had free weekends for sure this summer, which
I get that.
is. I'm definitely one of those people who thinks that like you if you have like a really busy summer, all you want is a weekend off, and then once you have time off, you're like, God, I'm so bored. I wish I was doing something. So we're never really happy with anything. So we are here this week to talk about a movie that was so goddamn good it makes me want to kiss Neil right on the mouth. That movie. That movie is Bone Tomahawk. So, Neil, would you like to tell the audience why you wanted to bring Bone Tomahawk?
Mm-hmm.
So, without giving away too much, I famously, or famously is probably the wrong word here, but like, rewind a bit. Sam, do you remember taking me and Friel and Jesse back in college to go see the Evil Dead remake?
Yes.
Do you remember how much I hated being there?
I remember that we were all little scary cats going into the theater, and I remember that we all hated being there, but I remember really liking that movie.
Yeah, so I remember it a little differently.
Okay.
Where I remember sitting between you and Friel, and every time something happened, I would just turn to you and say, "Fuck you, Sam, I hate you." And you know, we left the theater, and you know, a couple months passed, and when that movie came out in DVD, I immediately bought it because it's such a good movie.
Wow.
Bone Tomahawk is like that for me. Last week we talked about Beau is Afraid, where like if you took the keywords that you might use to describe that movie, it sounds like a movie that I would really like, and I didn't like it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Bone Tomahawk is the inverse of that, where I'm not like a huge Westerns guy. I'm not a horror guy. I'm not a gore guy. And that's what this is. But I do really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And so like when you've got something like that out there, I felt like I just had to bring it to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough. And what was your history with this? I mean, I kind of like knew about it, but what was your own personal history with Bone Tomahawk before we sat down and watched it?
Yeah. So, this was another movie that I did on my movie nights with my friend Jamie for a few years. And I went into it, and I was just like, oh, it's a Kurt Russell Western. I didn't
know. So you'd seen this before this most recent viewing?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
So I had some context going into this. But when I first watched it, I had no context. I didn't look up anything on IMDb. I just saw the, like the cover. I was like, oh, Kurt Russell. You know, he's got his same mustache as The Hateful Eight, and I wonder if he grew it for one and just kept it for the other because they came out the same year, actually.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a Kurt Russell Western. You know, I'll give it a shot. Why not? And then things happened in this movie that I was not expecting, and I was like gripping the arm of my couch, like screaming into my microphone.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Gideon, give me your background with this movie and tell me.
Yeah, I heard, I had heard about it, the name especially. I didn't really know too much about it, other than I knew there was that one graphic scene that's like the scene that I'm sure we'll get to. But that's all I really knew. So I went in fairly blind. We did decide to watch the trailer before we put in the movie, which I don't always do that. It just depends. And I just kind of wanted to check it out. Kind of bummed I watched the trailer, though, because it did spoil a couple moments. I don't know if it was just like that kind of era of trailer or whatever, but yeah, I'm really glad I watched it. I'm glad Neil brought it, and I'm excited to dig into it.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. I knew about this movie going in. I knew vague outlines, right? I knew it was about, I knew it was Western. I knew it was Kurt Russell, who is awesome and everything. You know, he almost defines that line for me that's like between actor and movie star. And I don't mean movie star in a negative way. I mean, like, in a really, he's just a charismatic individual that has he has a great look and a great screen presence and just lends himself well to these kinds of movies. And I knew about how violent it was going into it. And I knew that it kind of takes a turn from being a Western to being more of a cannibal horror movie at some point. Although I wouldn't really even, I don't really think this is a horror movie per se, but yeah, so I knew like a little bit about it going in, enough to be, you know, intrigued by it, right? So, yeah, but I had never seen it before. So this was a first viewing, and I watched it at home during the day when Grace was not around. So I kind of had a nice solo moving watching experience, and it was totally awesome. So let's give a little synopsis of the plot. Basically, takes place typical kind of Old West small town, population of 250 to 300 people. A few people from the town get kidnapped by a tribe of what are described as like troglodytes. They are like a offshoot of a Native American tribe, but they're like super inbred and crazy and psycho and hyper-violent.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're cave dwellers and things like this, right? So they kidnap a few people from the town, take them away, and then it's about our party of heroes that goes off after them to have a big rescue mission. Our party consists of Kurt Russell as kind of the town sheriff, Richard Jenkins, who is like the older deputy, Patrick Wilson, a.k.a. Night Owl, who is the
husband of one of the women who's been kidnapped.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And who's like a doctor of the town.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
Too. Our doctor, he's like the doctor too, I guess. Isn't
No, he's a carpenter. Ranching foreman.
Okay.
Her father is the town doctor, but he's also a drunk, so she's like the actual doctor.
Okay, mm-hmm. I gotcha. Okay.
And then Matthew Fox, who is kind of a lesser known actor, I think he was on The Lost, who kind of plays like this, I don't know how you would describe him, sort of this cocksure, kind of like, I've killed a bunch of Indians, so you should probably take me with you.
Kind of almost like a silver tongue devil, kind of like, almost like,
he reminds me of Dutch,
kind of like high and mighty, like he's got fancy clothes and thinks he's better and smarter than everybody else.
Yeah. So they go off on a rescue mission, and events transpire, to say the very least. So this is something I want to open up with. The cast in this movie is excellent. I can't think of a single performance that I didn't like in this movie. Neil, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of connections to previous movies we've watched on the podcast in this movie. So obviously we had Kurt Russell from The Thing.
Yep.
And like more generally, Sid Haig is a minor character in the opening sequence, which I want to talk about. But he's like a famous gore horror movie actor. Like he's been in like every Rob Zombie movie.
Okay.
Catherine Morris is Kurt Russell's wife in the movie. She's only in it for like 2 minutes, but she was, I believe, Tom Cruise's wife in Minority Report.
Okay.
We've got Michael Paré from Streets of Fire as the guy who owns the stables. He's only in it for about 2 minutes, but I honestly think that he was brought in because I'm guessing here. But I really think the writer and director, S. Craig Zahler, likes Streets of Fire because Kurt Russell tells Michael Paré's character that he'll slap him red in the bar if he keeps talking about his horses while people are being kidnapped, which is like the opening sequence of Streets of Fire.
Wow.
Sam, did you recognize the mayor's wife? Another like 30-second character.
No, I didn't.
That's Sean Young.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess. Let me look that up.
I'm pulling her up. Oh, she's God, in Blade Runner. Sean Young,
yeah.
Okay, shit, dude. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. She was kind of half covered by that hat thing. Uh-huh. Yeah, you're right.
That's
definitely Sean Young. Okay, yeah, for sure. A lot of throwbacks.
Damn. And yeah, but... isn't she in Dune with David Lynch's Dune?
She's yes. Tanya? Yep. Yeah.
She's... Holy shit, dude.
Yeah. But... definitely a great cast in this movie. And it seems like he's pulling, like, I wouldn't describe it as an all-star cast, but he's just, it's like a collection of excellent character actors who, I don't know. There's just, to me, there wasn't a bad performance in this movie. And I love, like, individually, there's three or four actors in here that I think are just outstanding and don't get enough credit. Like, Kurt Russell is very famous, but Patrick Wilson, I think, is great in pretty much everything. And I think Richard Jenkins in this movie steals the show. He's awesome.
Yeah, Richard Jenkins, sorry. Richard Jenkins is probably my second favorite after Kurt Russell in this movie. I do have some issues with some of the performances, but we can get into that.
I want to hear about that, but yeah, let's go to Neil.
I mean, I was just going to say, like, you know, I think I agree with Sam. I think that everybody's performance is great. I think Matthew Fox is kind of a lesser known actor because he has some personal life stuff that is not the greatest, but I think, like, I was willing to forgive him for this performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to see Lily Simmons in more stuff. I think she was very good for the amount of screen time that she had.
Okay. Was that his Arthur's Patrick wife? Wilson.
Yeah. Yeah. Mrs. O'Dwyer.
Okay.
He, she, that actress is the reformed underage prostitute in True Detective that Woody Harrelson ends up having an affair with, late in the season.
Hmm. I don't remember. I haven't seen that first season.
Oh, I remember. I liked her a lot, and when she showed back up in this, I was like, shit, dude, if I was Night Owl and I had a broken leg and my wife was that hot and she was a doctor, I'd be busting my ass out into the middle of this cannibal country, too. I'd be like, there's nothing stopping me from going after this. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
No, sorry. Gideon, I do want to hear your complaints about performances, but I do want to say, just like adding on to our discussion of the plot, I love one of the things I think that really adds depth to the performance and to the story is that, like, arguably, like, only one of the people in the rescue party should be there, and that's Kurt
mm-hmm.
Russell.
Mm-hmm.
So Patrick Wilson in the beginning of the movie is stuck at home with a broken leg, so he shouldn't be going out on this rescue mission. Chicory, who is Richard Jenkins' character, they call him the backup deputy, but I think he's Kurt Russell's old friend who's mm-hmm. like suffering from the death of his wife, and they just like give him the job title just so that he has something to do and like doesn't drink himself to death, or like just like they know where he is and they can keep an eye on him.
Yeah.
Because he's not very good at much until he is. And Matthew Fox's character, Mr. Bruder, is on this mission because his character hates Native Americans and he just wants to kill Native Americans.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also maybe bang Night Owl's wife. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't think he was that morally bankrupt in that
regard. Okay. That's fair. Yeah. He did say he got rejected by her.
Mm-hmm.
God. That brings up one of the fun dynamics I want to talk about later. But I want to hear your
yeah. So yeah, defend yourself. What is your issue with the performance in this movie?
So I do like the cast, and I had a lot of fun with this movie. I didn't totally buy like Patrick Wilson and his wife's like relationship. I thought it was just a bit like corny or cheesy at times, and just like some of the dialogue he said, he's like, oh, you're so pretty when you're angry. I'm like, this is not doing it for me, like stuff like this. It's like, and even with some of my favorite movies like Dune, for example, like the new ones, like I feel like sometimes movies when they get like really serious, it's almost like so serious that it becomes like kind of funny, you know. And yeah, like I agree with like Kurt Russell's character, like a lot, like the husband shouldn't be coming because he's like angry and not taking care of his leg, and and literally like dragging them down. And the, you know, the sidekick deputy, Richard Jenkins' character, is just like, I remember at one point I was like, you just say like whatever is in your head. He's like, they're all going to sleep. They need to sleep. And he's like, do you ever read in the bathtub? I'm like, what the fuck are you doing right now? Like, so it was just, some things were a little goofy. And then like, when we get to Lily, is it Simmons?
Yeah, Lily Simmons, yeah.
Simmons. When we get there, I'm like, her teeth are so white for her being in this like cannibal cave, and her dress is so like barely dirty, like just the tiniest bit dirty, and just like she didn't seem like she really went through hardly anything, and she just kind of been chilling. Like, so her, like, literally just chilling. And even after we see the most horrific violence in the movie, I felt like she wasn't that, like, shaken by it, like, in her performance.
I have a question for you guys regarding that as we get further in.
Okay.
I want to, like, put a pin in that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
I'll take it. Keep talking, Gideon.
The, I guess the other thing, just kind of overall, and Alyssa had commented on it seeming lower budget, which I personally didn't really notice. I thought it looked and sounded great and everything like that. Yeah. But looking at the Wikipedia, it has an extremely small budget. It was
like $1 million.
$1.88 million.
Less than two is kind of long and short of it.
Which I think it's incredible what they pulled off for that. But at times, a lot of the different actors, it almost felt like more just like actors having fun like playing cowboys than me like feeling their full character, you know, where you can kind of get lost in the character and like not see the actor, I guess. But I didn't feel that way with like Kurt Russell, and I still liked Richard Jenkins a lot. Even the Clarence guy, Fred Melamed, the barkeep guy.
Oh.
Yeah. Or the drifter too that went into town. So it was just a little goofy with some things, but I still had a lot of fun with this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, were you gonna say something? Neil, were you gonna say something?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, it's doing that thing where it's catching up again. So yeah, I just heard you.
I'm sorry. I was gonna say for less than $2 million, like a lot of which I have to assume was
Kurt Russell,
and I assume Patrick Wilson probably got paid pretty well too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
yeah. That or else, you know, like somebody was calling in some favors to get these, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, Kurt Russell's definitely A list. You can argue Patrick Wilson if he's like low A or somewhere in the B tier, but like, you know. There's a lot of like name recognition in the cast here,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
So for less than $2 million, I either assume like they did it like sort of as a pro bono kind of thing, or like they really liked the script, or regardless, like I think production value is great, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, and yeah. A lot of that I think actually comes down to, sort of the idea of. Like there's some great practical effects in the movie, but I feel like we should just kind of talk about it. There's sure. kind of the scene.
Yeah.
So late in the movie, our heroes have been whittled down a bit. Matthew Fox makes his last stand. Patrick Wilson is still lagging behind because his broken leg has gotten infected and their horses were stolen earlier in the movie. So Chicory and Sheriff Hunt have been captured. And they are brought to the Troglodyte Cave, where they find Mrs. O'Dwyer and the actual deputy, Nick, imprisoned. And shortly after Chicory and Sheriff Hunt are put into their cage, the Troglodytes come out and butcher Deputy Nick So they scalp him, they shove his scalp into his mouth, nail it to the roof of his mouth, and then strip him down and then bisect him from the groin. And the like strictly from a production end of things, like that scene I think is kind of carried by the sound effects. Like yeah. You hear the crunch and the slice, and it's horrifying.
And the screaming.
The screaming is all there. But and like you definitely see some stuff, but they also hide some bits based on the camera position, and I think it's really smartly done. In like, we don't have the budget to show everything, so we're going to show what we can with the budget that we have, and then also, like, I think a lot of the horror is conveyed because it cuts between the literally cuts. Between the butchery and then to Kurt Russell's face, and so much is conveyed in like his reaction to what is happening in the room with him. And so it's literally a case of show, don't tell. Like you know, we might have toned it down, or we might have described what was happening. Like we could have had a scene where Mrs. O'Dwyer cries and is like telling them what happened to so-and-so, and instead they show us what they can, and then more is shown to us just through the reactions of the people in the room. And I think it's like that's the scene of the movie, and I think it's done to perfection with the budgetary limitations that they had in place. I think it's just like, it's disgusting, and part of me hates it, but I also just want to give it like the chef's kiss. Just
very well executed.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, you know, I hate to say that watching a man get basically cut from groin to belly button and then watch his guts get torn out was awesome, but that scene was fucking awesome, dude. Like, I knew what was coming, basically. Mm-hmm. I did not know about the scalping. I had just heard about the bisection, right? So the scalping was a total shock to me. And then like they're scalping him, I'm like, okay, they're gonna scalp him, fine, whatever. I had like mentally prepared myself to like get over that in the few seconds where like I saw them take the knife out and then like, grab him by the hair or whatever. I was not prepared for when they shoved the scalp in his mouth and then nailed it to the roof of his mouth. I was not ready for that one in particular. The sound that made was pretty gnarly. And then you know, like, here's really the thing I've been thinking about with this scene, is that when anybody talks about Bone Tomahawk, they talk about this scene. Like, you know, the movie's just going along totally fine, and then that happens. Right. That's not really how this movie is, though. Like, I felt completely led up to that level of violence by the rest of the movie. Because this is a really violent movie, and it's not just that scene, right? Mm-hmm. Like
the opening, man,
the opening, somebody gets their guts carved out. Like the idea that Bone Tomahawk is like tricking people into thinking that it's a Kurt Russell western, and then they get to the scene and it does a what this is not From Dusk Till Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they tell you what kind of movie this is going to be, and then they just keep ramping it up. Now obviously that's the most extreme version of that kind of violence, but I don't think it's necessarily unexpected. And like, yes, it ramps up quickly, but I don't think that there's no ramp up. Another thing I'm going to say about the violence in this movie, how are these cave dweller people getting these their instruments to be so fucking sharp?
Yeah, like, interesting.
When Kurt Russell takes a swing at one of their feet, it just completely like cuts off like four toes.
With, like half his foot, yeah.
Half his foot. And it's like the cleanest cut you could possibly imagine. There's one scene where, like, one of them's got Kurt Russell on the ground and he, like, drags it across his stomach and it, like, cuts open a huge chunk of his stomach where, like, enough that they can, like, shove a hot piece of metal into. It's like, God damn, what are these guys using out here to sharpen? That you would think it would be more of a blunt kind of instrument at that point, or they'd have something with some teeth on it and kind of like gnash somebody down, but like Yeah, those whatever they got in those caves is fucking sharp.
There's something that I feel like, I don't know that it's a theme exactly, but the one thing I kind of honed in on personally was like almost the ineffectiveness of metal and like technology within the movie. So like obviously things are limited because it's like the late 1800s. I kind of talked about this before when we watched Event Horizon, where I feel like they, you know, kind of blew their load early, where like they showed the spooky thing in the first 30 seconds. And this movie, I think, ran the risk of doing that. But the opening scene starts with Sid Haig and I think, I forget the other actor's name, but they're two guys that just murder people in the wilderness and like take their stuff back to town to sell it. And it literally starts with like a guy sleeping on his back, and all of a sudden Sid Haig's buddy is like on top of him trying to slit his throat with a like a letter opener almost.
Yeah.
And the metal knife does not cut this guy's throat cleanly or quickly. Like,
oh yeah.
Like he's almost like crushing his way in. And then like you said, Sam, like these guys are using like deer jaw bones that have been sharpened down to an edge, and they're just slicing and dicing.
Yeah, it's like these guys are fucking Sephiroth with these things. I mean, flames are flying everywhere. I mean, just crazy shit's happening. I definitely think you're right that it is a, like you were saying about Kurt Russell's reaction in the cave, the horror emotion that the movie is supposed to elicit is this, it's almost like Deliverance. Like it's this fear of like suddenly running into something that you know you are completely ineffective against, like the doomedness of it, really. Like the fact that you're just completely powerless and ill prepared for what awaits you in this like godforsaken hellscape. I think like that is ultimately the emotion that the movie is trying to elicit from you. And some movies do violence for violence sake, but I think that the violence in this movie is trying to bring you to that place to, and it very, I think, effectively does. I wouldn't describe this as a horror movie in terms of like jump scares, but it's definitely tense, and it is, it horror fills adjacent. You with a sense of dread that is like completely palpable. This movie is 2 hours and 15 minutes. This movie flew by. I was so entertained the whole time, and like 70% of the movie is them riding across the desert, you know, and they just have great characters and great dialogue, and they keep that. I know you think that the I'm gonna read in the bathtub stuff is like goofy or whatever, but like I loved these characters so much. It was just a great hangout movie.
I'll say, even though you know, I think sometimes the characters may be a little goofy or wonky or whatever, they're never not interesting. And the dialogue, like, yeah, definitely engaging, and just hearing them talk, and it's like, it is almost like the definition of like a ragtag group of people doing everything they can to try and save these other people that got kidnapped, by this very dark, mysterious, and horrifying, dangerous like beings in the West. And I love the movie for that, for how it ramps up the horror of them, and like the mystery, and just how frightening they are.
Yeah.
And when you, the fucking sound they make with that whistle thing, that's really freaky. And how you don't get a good glimpse at them until way late in the movie.
So two little bits of trivia. One is this trivia, and just I think one is just something to notice. I think it's just good filmmaking. One, the cave set in this movie is the cave in Iron Man, where Tony Stark builds the
suit for the first time. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Dude, Iron Man, what if he showed up at the end of this?
That'd be great. It'd be over. I don't care how sharp those deer jaws are. You know, they're not going through whatever Iron Man
suit. Mark One or whatever the fuck. Yeah. Whatever. Unobtainium, probably.
It's not going through unobtainium. Number two would be, did you guys notice how
that, like, when they start off on the search party, they're like going through rolling hills and there's like ponds and it's like it's the West, but it's very like green. And then like as the days go by, it just gets rockier and rockier until they're like in this primordial sand, nothing but sand and rock. There's no life to be seen anywhere.
I did not notice. I didn't pick up on that,
Yeah.
honestly.
It's like, you know, it's there's a lot of shit in this movie that's like you're not going to notice it, to paraphrase Red Letter Media, like you don't notice it, but your brain notices.
I like that.
Yeah. You know, and the funny thing about this is I'm struggling to think of more things to say about it because the plot is so incredibly simple. It's like it's the searchers, so like we're just going to go rescue these people, and then you know the rest of it's kind of on the characters, and then there's some action like really late in the movie, but it's kind of a simple movie for something that goes on for 2 hours and 15 minutes.
One thing I want,
Yeah,
go ahead, Neil.
One thing I want to say is I do think that dread is a great word to describe this movie because, yeah, like the extreme violence really doesn't happen until the last like half hour of the movie. There are obviously there's the opening scene, there's the raid on the town, and there's an incident with Mr. Bruder where the horses get stolen. But most of the movie is just them, you know, making what I think they say we're going to do a 5 day horse ride in 3 days, and then later they wind up having to walk because things go wrong, and that adds to the dread because again we're watching like you know there's the ticking clock element. We don't know, we're told early on that the troglodytes are cannibals, but we haven't really seen it yet. But like at the very least, you know, these people have been in the troglodytes' clutches for however many days. Like, you know, we have to get to them quickly. But on top of that, we've got Patrick Wilson and his busted leg, which would be fine if he was staying at home, but he's like aggravating it, and it's getting dirty, and like it's getting infected, and you know, like he's not going to turn back because his wife is,
Super hot.
super hot and has been captured.
And like the hound doctor. Yeah.
Yeah, she's got double D brains, that's for sure.
So like you know it's kind of like you know is he going to be able to rescue her before like they have to lop his leg off, which they bring up the possibility of having to do that. And like one scene that I think was actually like really well done is like they're discussing his infected leg, and he had previously just like so after the horse has been stolen, he falls down and like has rebroken the leg, like whatever damage he had repaired while he was in town has like been undone, and it's like set itself so like the bone would be crooked. And Chicory, who apparently was like a surgeon in the Civil War, has to re-break his leg. And you know, we see all the prep work, we see him getting ready for it, they give him some opium, and then he brings out this like it's like the hammer that I would use to like smash out a veal cutlet or something. And he just raises it, and then we cut away, and we just hear the clunk and the scream. But yeah, like and then you know things eventually do just get off go off the rails, but that sense of dread is there, and at a certain point, like I feel like it has transformed because before you had active characters who were trying to save these people and like make a change, and then their power is taken away by and large, and but that dread is still there, and now like hope is lessened so much. I think it's just done super effectively.
Do you guys think if you wouldn't have gone into this knowing about the violence that you would have suspected something was going to go down by the end of the movie?
I think so. Yeah, I would have hoped. Like, I mean, they've talked about these guys being really horrifying cannibals that like rape and kill their own mothers and shit like that. So I was kind of I feel like I would have been expecting like someone's getting really fucked up at some point somehow.
See, you know, this is going to be a really far out there analogy, but do you know how they measure the weight of things that are, or the volume of objects that is like too big to fit on a scale? They fill like a giant like tub with water that to right to the brim, and then they drop, not that they lower the large object into the vat of water, and then the water that it displaces, that's the volume.
Okay.
Like they just measure the volume of the water that it displaced. That's how they figure that out sometimes. You know, it's like sometimes like you can figure things out that are going to happen in movies by other things that have not happened, right? Like the absence of other things, that's how you come to your final calculation. When they showed up at the cave and nothing had happened to the girl, to the wife, or the sheriff, I was like, there's about to be some bad shit that goes down in this cave. Like, oh, I think if I wouldn't have known that going in, I think I still would have suspected that there was going to be some gnarly shit, because they had been leading up to that, and then you get there and they're fine. You're like, oh no, like somebody in this cave is not making it out. And sure as shit, they do not make it out of the cave. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's an utterly brilliantly constructed movie in almost every way. I don't have a bad thing to say about Bone Tomahawk.
Wow.
We're coming up on about an hour, guys. We want to start thinking about a wrap up and
sure.
I
have one other small nitpick I could talk about. Yeah. Just again with like the goofiness. So Patrick Wilson, I do like him as an actor, but he does feel a little silly to me in some of his roles. And I just kept thinking of him being like in The Conjuring, being like the dad or whatever. And I was like, I need to conjure up some strength to save my wife, you know? And when they like re-broke his leg, like the scene Neil was just talking about, and then he goes on and it's like he's their only hope, right? And he takes a tumble again after that. And it's like arguably the worst fall he's had yet, but then he still somehow manages to kill like almost, or if not all of them, the troglodytes. And like you see, they live in it was funny too. Like this is where I did start to see some lower budget. Like, do they just live in like a 2-bedroom cave? Like, cause it's just like here in that hallway is what it felt like, just the one room. But I was like, you're telling me this guy who's been struggling the entire movie with his fucked up leg is going to climb up that big ass steep hill and then kill everybody and save them? I was like, all right. But, you know, it's still like movie logic. It's like
you're talking about the cave. One more thing I want to mention are the amputated and blinded.
Yeah, gotta talk about that.
Females that are in the cave for, you know, they're maybe on screen for 10 seconds, but what an amazing piece of world building and universe building. It kind of establishes, like, it almost seems like something out of Mad Max, right? I would say that it's in the background per se, but, you know, it's something that's just kind of like glossed over, and you feel like you understand a lot more about the enemy. Like, about
it added to even more dread to them,
right? Yeah.
And
I was like, oh man.
And for how violent the movie gets, I'm like, old man, please kill those women, like put them out of their misery.
Boom, boom. That would have been so easy.
And even the, you know, they talked about them being like blinded too, and like I forget, like cripples they call them. But it's like, I didn't know they were blinded by having fucking stakes in their eyes and just leaving them there, you know?
Right.
Like, Jesus. Yeah. That was really effective.
Well, and even the things that they use to make that sound, it's like those bones have been embedded into their neck deeply. Like one of the, I think like one of the most violent scenes in the movie that people gloss over is Night Owl digging out one of those things out of the dead one's neck. He's digging around with that knife for 30, 40 seconds, just straight in there, just trying to get that fucker out.
Yeah.
It's like, one of the most violent like if that was in any other movie, it'd be the most violent thing in the movie. But in Bone Tomahawk, it's like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Can I point out that them using the neck bone, they straight up stole that plot point from Jurassic Park 3.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Like in Jurassic Park 3, they're able to like 3D print a Velociraptor like vocal chamber, and they use it to like distract and freak out the Velociraptors.
Okay.
Much the same way that Patrick Wilson does with that bone that they grow into their necks somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sorry, they straight up stole that from Jurassic.
That's so funny.
That's my one nitpick of this movie.
Neil, I don't hate Jurassic Park 3. I think Jurassic Park 3 is kind of okay.
No, it's no Jurassic Park 1, but I enjoyed 3.
Well, I need to rewatch it. I remember watching that on repeat as a kid and being traumatized by like the runway scene where the guy gets hit with the propeller blade and the blood goes over the windshield. I was like, "Why?" Even as a kid, I was like, "Why am I watching this?" I was like, "Oh yeah, dinosaurs."
That was like the movie that I was too afraid to watch, but my younger brother was like obsessed with Jurassic Park. Like he would just—I mean, this dates me, but we would take the VHS and he would we wore out the VHS because he just wanted to see the T-Rex like chomp the guy off the toilet and like shake him around. And shit. Like that's all he wanted to see. He thought that was the best thing ever.
That was me, but with that guy blowing up in the pod racing scene.
do the noise that he makes,
kid. Where he's like, the fucking wrench goes in, fucking blows everything.
This is like Tim Allen from Home Improvement.
Well, can anybody do the noise that Neil was talking about, the dinosaur? Because I think I know in my head.
It's like a barking. It's like a
Okay. Is it like kind of?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I gotcha.
it's almost like high pitched and like almost a little grittier than that, but like, it would be hard for a human to like recreate that noise. But yeah. So let's get around to ratings. I think Gideon, you're gonna give it the lowest rating, so go ahead.
Yeah, I mean this is since we're doing just 5 stars. It will be a 3 for me, but it's like the strongest 3 I can give it. It's basically a 3.5.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really bad. I think it's still great. It's very well executed, very enjoyable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
If you are like trying to get into Westerns or get into horror, this is a great pick. It was a lot of fun. I don't really have that many complaints. It's like a little goofy. You know, it is almost shockingly low budget and just how much they're able to accomplish. Like I said, the only time I really felt the low budget was we just have this one room and that's the cave.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I had a really good time. I felt it was maybe a little bit too long. Like their journey could have maybe been cut short by 20 minutes or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I didn't really have a bad time with this at all, and I'm glad I got around to it. And, you know, I was a little nervous. I feel like I've gotten better about gore with movies after watching and being exposed to more things. But it was, like, still as shocking as I expected just from what I had read with that scene. And it still packed as much as a punch as you could expect at hope for, I guess.
Did you watch this with Alyssa?
Yeah.
Okay. What did she think?
Yeah, about the same as me. We both had a good time, but yeah, like 3.5. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, I have a theory about that, but I'll save it. Neil, go ahead.
I think I have to give this one the strongest possible 4.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a 5 in that it's like a universally enjoyable movie. Like I wouldn't recommend this to my mom. So it misses out on that, and like, you know, kind of like I was describing before with, you know, keywords. It's not a movie that was made for me. I like it. I'll even say I love it in spite of all that. But like, you know, like, again, like if you said Western horror to me, I'd be like, yeah. not I don't know why I'd be interested in that, man. But so it's a technicality away from being a 5 for me. But it's so I'm going to give it a super strong 4.
Wow.
You know, like I'm with you that like this is not a movie for me in the way that like High Fidelity is a movie for me, or you know, a couple other movies, like Blue Velvet would be a movie for me, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That said, I just thought this was so fucking good. Like I couldn't get over how much I like this movie, and I feel like I very rarely feel that way on this podcast. Like, especially this year, like I look back on the last 10 movies, I feel like I've given a lot of 3s, a lot of right down the middle of the road. Didn't love it. Didn't hate it. Kind of mm-hmm. felt like, you know, and I feel like I've given a lot of 2s this year, like 2s and 3s. This has been the year of 2s and 3s for me, basically. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's just like because I was psyched to actually just enjoy one of the movies. And I also have a feeling that part of it is that I watched it alone and Grace wasn't around. Which mm-hmm. Neil, do you think this is a guy movie? This is like a hangout movie.
I don't know, man.
In the same way Deliverance was. Maybe.
Like Deliverance was an experience for you, me, and Paul, and I'm glad we shared it together. But in retrospect, I don't know if I would have suggested we watch it together.
Yeah.
I feel kind of the same way. Like, you know, it would have been something that happened to us.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of wanted to watch it by myself and like stew in my emotions and like not have to like performatively react, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I felt that was exactly the reason I watched it by myself, because I didn't want to have to be like, calm down, it's just a movie. Like, get over yourself. I didn't want to have to have like that moment during the movie. So, anyway, so I'm just beating around the bush. Would it make sense to give this movie the lowest possible 5? I mean,
that's fine.
Does that make sense, guys? It's like, I want to give this a 5, but I am acknowledging what Neil says in that, like, this is not in any way, shape, or form a movie specifically for me. I don't particularly like have a thing for Westerns. But it's got everything I love in movies. It's got high levels of violence. It has Kurt Russell. It has snappy, funny, quirky dialogue. Like a simple, compelling premise, interesting characters, TNA, like just across the board, just like, everything I want out of a movie is in Bone Tomahawk. I had a great time. I didn't even have popcorn or M&Ms or anything. I just like raw dogged this movie and watched it during the middle of the day like an idiot, and just thought it was totally awesome. If I would have seen this in the theater with Milk Duds and shit, I don't know. Yeah. That probably would have been the end. Like, that would have been like my peak life existence. I just thought it was awesome. So I'm going to go with like, I'll say the lowest possible 5. I loved it, although I'm acknowledging that I'm leaving room at the top for the Blue Velvets and the other things like that.
I don't know. That's fine. I feel like you can have as many favorites as you want. You know, you can mm-hmm. have tons of 5s, and I know sometimes I rate things really high or really mm-hmm. low, yeah. But no, I'm just stoked that we all had a really good time, and
yeah,
I'm really glad we saw it.
Neil is correct, though. The shame about this movie being so good is that you're gonna be like, what'd you do this weekend, Sam? You're gonna be like, I watched Bone Tomahawk. They're like, should I watch it? You're gonna be like, fuck no, I work with you. You're gonna report me to HR.
Yeah.
It's like, I can't tell my parents to watch it. I can't tell my in-laws to watch it. I can't tell anybody to watch this movie except you, sickos. So,
I do have a couple of things I could mention. The kind of what you were talking about, or like I saw this Letterboxd review, and it was like, God, this person just sounds so annoying. But they were like, my new favorite, it was like 4 stars. My new favorite hobby is showing people this movie just so I can see their reaction to that scene. And it's kind of like what Neil was talking about, like that performative like reaction. And it's like, God, you just sound insufferable. It's like you're gonna make someone watch this like 2-hour 50-minute movie for this like 2-minute scene. It's like just show them the scene on YouTube or something. I don't know.
Like, okay, I don't mean to sound like Mr. Tough Guy. I was thinking the scene in my head was going to be way worse than it actually was. Did anybody else have that reaction to it? Like, it was bad. Like, obviously.
I don't know. It pretty much met my expectations, and it went a little bit further with the scalp getting stuffed in his mouth.
Yeah. Okay. The scalp was bad. When I heard about the bisection in the movie, I thought we were going all the way from groin to neck with that shit, and they went to, you know, if they got to his belly button, that would have been pretty far. You know, I'm not saying it wasn't gruesome and graphic and shit, but I had worked it up so much more extreme in my head, and it wasn't it. You know, they give him a couple chops, they give him a good yank, the couple guts come flying out, and that's basically it. You know, I thought it was going to be a lot worse. Now I don't know how you would go a lot worse without going for like an NC-17 or I don't even know how you would do it.
For me personally, like the fact that like the tomahawk only starts the process and they pull the guy apart actually made it worse for me. But no, I think like, because of like the budgetary restrictions and like they were kind of going for like a Kurt Russell's face is going to tell the story that's going on here rather than us showing all the practical effect, kind of puts it in this like realm where like it's definitely R-rated, but like you can see in your mind's eye like a version of this where it's just like a really edgy PG-13 film. Like PG-13 has also gotten like pushed pretty far as like what you can show, where I think like that line is kind of blurry and like we've kind of been desensitized.
Now Gideon, I gotta look through some of these Letterboxd reviews because there's some absolute doozies on this movie. I can already tell that there's gonna be some annoying people in here.
Okay. I do have one other quick thing I wanted to mention just with watching with Alyssa. So she actually, I think after we finished watching Bone Tomahawk, she then finished, no spoilers, but Chapter 6 of Red Dead 2 for her first playthrough. So we were totally in like that Western mood, and Alyssa is kind of the person that's like introduced me to a lot of horror and got me more into it. So that was really fun just from that angle of her just like, I think it just depends. Like I get what you mean by saying like this is kind of more like a guy movie, which I definitely feels like that, but I feel like, yeah, if you have any appreciation for like just like literally a spooky almost like Western tale that you hear around the campfire or something like this is that fucking movie,
you know. And I don't mean guy movie as in like, hey, it has guns and action and there's like disembowelings and things like that. It strikes me as a guy movie in the way that the dialogue is, and the idea that it's like four guys who don't particularly like each other, or that, I mean, some of them like each other and some don't, but they're like all out to get this job done, and they're like mean to each other, but in like with this like air of professionalism as well. Like I think that like they really nail that relationship between working males who are like tough with each other, but like in the service of like the thing that they're trying to do. And like they hate this Matthew Fox guy, but they're like toward the end he's dying and they're like, it'll all be worth something, you know, shake hands and then go. Like it's just like, I don't know, that part of it I think is like very very male and very like fun to watch.
There's another great bit of visual storytelling in just when they set up camp, where Kurt Russell, Chicory, and even Patrick Wilson, like they all sleep like in proximity to each other, and Matthew Fox sleeps like 10 feet away. Like they're in the same camp, and nobody ever says anything about it. But you just know just from that visual, like, you know, he kind of holds himself aloof for whatever reason. And the movie kind of explains some of that.
But like, it's like you're almost expecting him to like betray the rest of the group, and that moment never really comes.
Yeah, well, like, he's definitely an outsider in a very small circle of people. Like, I just think the visual storytelling of this movie, I think, is just amazing. And one other thing I want to point out is, I think this was only the second thing that this director has made.
Yep.
Damn, okay.
Yeah, not a debut, but pretty.
I'm looking at what else he did.
Craig Zoller, I think is the name.
He's a Silent Blackout screenwriter. It's his first director, or...
Oh, it was his
directorial debut, yeah.
Damn.
Okay.
He Dude, did. Nailed it. I mean, not a lot of better directorial debuts than this. Eraserhead's up there, but, you know.
And he did Brawl in Cell Block 99, which was 2 years after this.
I haven't seen that. But
I heard that's really good.
He's definitely on my list now. I'm like going back and looking at other shit this guy's made. This movie was fucking sick.
Shit.
So, awesome, guys. Well, is it my turn to pick for next week?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, I've been saying this for a while. I've been thinking about what I want to do for my next one, and I keep trying, and I can't get away from the idea of trying to pick a movie that Neil will give a 5 to. Not one that he's already seen, but a movie that Neil's going to give a 5 that I think he's going to like just, you know, hoom his pants over. And I think for that reason, I'm going to pick 1917.
Oh, yeah, dude. Nice.
Sam Mendes, Roger Deakins joint. Gideon, have you seen 1917?
I think I've seen it 2 or 3 times now, but okay. I like it.
Shoot, I don't want to pick a movie that you've already seen.
Okay with that. It's been about a year or two since I've seen it.
Well, and we should be able to get like Paul and Alex as well, I think, for probably next time.
Yeah, I have no issues with you picking that, because I would love to hear Neil's thoughts about it.
Okay. Yeah. And so we'll do 1917. Next week will be Pentiment Act 2.
Mm-hmm.
Neil, if I know you're down to just your laptop, but your laptop, you know, if you wanted to get in with us on Pentiment, it is not too late. We're all having a ball discussing and kind of keeping up on that shit.
Would love to hear your thoughts on
that. Yeah, I would really like to hear your thoughts on Pentiment. I think it's like a game that is right up your alley.
I'm hoping to buy my parts this weekend, so we'll see if I can get the computer running. And
I mean, even if you didn't, like, this game would run on your laptop. It's completely 2D. Mm-hmm. Probably. I mean, it would probably
run. I don't know. It runs on my Switch really good, so I would think so.
If it runs on the Switch, it would run on, like, most people's microwaves, probably, so.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly.
Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, let us know what you want to do with that, bud, and we'll get that scheduled for next week, and then the week after that would be 1917.
That sounds good to me.
I got to break in my OLED. With the
1917. Oh yeah, dude. I might watch it with director's commentary to get like a different perspective.
Okay.
I have it on 4K Blu-ray, but I think it has a commentary with the cinematographer.
You know, now that you're saying that, I think I'm gonna have to get it on Blu-ray as well, because this is one of those movies that looks so good you want to look at it on.
Yeah.
Same cinematographer as Blade Runner 2049.
Yep. I think he also did Raising Arizona.
He did a lot of the Coen brother.
Yeah.
He did Fargo. He did No Country for Old Men.
I just want to say one last line about Bone Tomahawk. Yeah. It is such a definition of doing a lot with a little. Like, I was shocked when I saw the budget. I was like, holy shit. Like,
dude,
would not have guessed
that. That's what I like about it. It's so simple. The plot of it is extremely simple and understandable. Night Owl wants his hot piece of ass wife back, and we're going to go into cannibal country and take care of business. We're going to TCB, and we're going to get, you know, we're going to get going. And it's just not hard to understand. Easy motivations to understand. Minimalist, like, we're going to, it's just horses and the California desert and a cave. That's fucking it. Just great. Anyway, all right. I'll see you guys next week for Pentiment, and the following week for 1917.
Hell yeah!
See you guys
later. Have a good night, boys.